Please, the court, at the outset, I acknowledge, as I must, the difficult standard that the appellant has for this court to set aside an arbitration award. That standard of judicial review is why, quite frankly, out of the hundreds of cases I've arbitrated in a 31-year career, I've only taken two cases to federal court to attempt to set aside an arbitration award. I have the utmost respect for the arbitration process, but sometimes arbitrators get it wrong, and the justice is done. And quite frankly, this is such a case. In analyzing whether this case is appropriate for this court to set aside,
I thought about your position. You're complaining about the fact that the arbitrator read the agreement too literally. We usually think of literal interpretation as narrow, and that arbitrators only get into trouble when they stray outside the contract and bring their own ideas in.
What the arbitrator did, he framed the issue, you can see at the appendix at page A22, he framed it as, did the company have reasonable cause to believe that the grievant is under the influence of drugs? And what that framing of the issue ignores is that there were two tests involved.
That other part of your argument is really, I think, waived.
Well,
is this about that other test?
The environmental test?
That swabbing test, whatever it was. Well, I don't think you made that to the arbitrator.
Judge, we did, with all due respect. There was evidence presented. The facts, first of all, let me say, the arbitration, there was two arguments we made. One is we had reasonable cause to have the grievance submit to the more invasive blood urine test.
Right, and you're stuck with the fact that the arbitrator interpreted the language literally, and that the language in the agreement is badly worded from your standpoint.
That's correct. We that issue is not before the court, but the second issue, which was evidence was submitted to the arbitrator, is the environmental test. And the arbitrator understood it. That did not escape his attention. He stopped the proceeding at one point and said, so the grievant refused both tests. Is that correct? That's correct. But what he addressed only is the reasonable cause testing for the blood urine test. He never addressed the environmental test in this case. And I will concede,
well, there's
Judge,
nothing in your agreement about the environmental test.
It comes into play, well.
That's another of your weaknesses. Plus the fact that that your argument, your cooperation argument, I don't think it was made, but even if it was, your argument about cooperation, the logic of it is that you can require the worker to take the blood or the urine test at any time, and if he refuses, then you just say, well, he didn't cooperate.
That's not correct. Our position is that the blood urine test required reasonable cause, and if we didn't have reasonable cause, then as the arbitrator held, if he read it, as you said, literally, at the time, on December 10th, 1999, was he under the influence, then his refusal to submit to that test is not a refusal to cooperate. But the language is, the conjunctive or is used in the policy. It says, or it refuses to submit the test, which by the policy is the blood urine test, or to otherwise fully cooperate in an investigation involving drugs. So the factual predicate to that is there an investigation involving drugs? And
But you see, what you're arguing is that failure to cooperate means not submitting to tests. And then you draw a completely arbitrary line between the blood and urine test and the environmental test.
Judge, but the policy...
But it's not a bad argument, but I don't know why I don't see how you can say an arbitrator has to accept that interpretation.
But the policy defines test as being the blood-urine test. So when the conjunctive or is used...
Now you're making this tortured argument that this is not a test within the meaning of the... This is not a test, because it isn't blood or urine, it's not a test. It's something else that falls under the head of required cooperation. That's what you're saying.
That's correct. That's a good
argument, but how can you say the arbitrator, took leave of his senses or brought in some extraneous policy in rejecting the argument. It's just an ingenious contractual interpretation that you're...
Because, Judge Posner...
I don't think you made it to the arbitrator, or at least didn't make it clearly. So it's hard to blame him for not having bought it.
Without question, he never addressed...
I don't think you ever made it to him in the form that you've just stated it.
But it was in the evidence. I twice, through the company witness, had him testify. And when he talked to the grievant on December 10th, he explained to the grievant that you're suspected of drug trafficking in the plant. We're in an investigation. We'd like to clear you of that. Will you submit to the test, including the drug blood urine test and the environmental test? And he refused both tests. That was laid out before the arbitrator. In fact, I thought the arbitrator understood it.
But you didn't make the argument you've just made now, in which you distinguish between the different types of tests and you put the environmental test into this failure to cooperate bin.
Judge Posner, the policy was read to the grievant twice, and that's in
the policy was, but not your interpretation of it.
I don't know what else I can do other than to put into evidence.
You have to make an argument to the arbitrator. You have to say the way we interpret the duty to cooperate, it is a duty that requires the worker to submit to any test we want to submit him to, except blood or urine. That's your argument. I don't think you ever made that to the arbitrator.
But we did put in the record.
I don't care about your but. You didn't make the argument. How can you fault the arbitrator for rejecting an argument that you didn't make?
The transcript is not the place to make an argument. The transcript is the place to present evidence. And that's what
the transcript isn't the place to... You have to make an argument to the arbitrator for your interpretation. You can't just put in witnesses. You make an argument. You tell the arbitrator what your interpretation is.
I
just told us.
I agree, Judge, but
you never did it.
But when the arbitrator stopped the proceeding and says he refused both tests, I didn't understand how he was supposed to be clairvoyant and
well, do you have a chance after the evidence? Didn't you have a chance after the evidence was all over to lay out for the arbitrator what your case was?
I'm sorry.
I mean, did you have that opportunity?
At the close of the hearing, the arbitrator asked about reasonable cause. And I twice tried to address that issue. And if you look at the appendix, both at pages A200 and A201, I'm interrupted both times. He does not let me finish my statement as to what our position ultimately is with respect to the reasonable cause requirement as it relates to the blood urine testing and the environmental test. Remember, the environmental test is not an invasive process. It's what we do at the airport with respect to the explosives. In this case, it's the technology is used to detect narcotics, in this case, cocaine. So it's not the invasive process. And he acknowledged he understood there were two tests that were being that the grievant was being asked to submit to. So I will concede this, but without question, both Judge Williams and Judge Posner, that we spent a lot of time.
But you never said to the arbitrator, "Look, our interpretation of the cooperation requirement is that he has to submit to non-invasive tests."
When I tried to do that at the end of the hearing, I was cut off both times. That's where we are. And does that equate with a waiver? I don't think so. And I will concede this to both you, Judge Posner, and you, Judge Williams. We spent a lot of time on reasonable cause. And the reason why is because you have to establish underlying facts.
You've abandoned the reasonable cause.
I am honestly very uncomfortable at that conclusion. I don't think that under the Seventh Circuit case...
You spent all your time with an argument. You spent all your time before the arbitrator with an argument that you've abandoned, and you didn't make clear to him that which is your real emphasis, your real argument was about this environmental test being part of the duty of cooperation.
Judge Posner, when he hears the evidence, though, and asks the questions, what am I to assume? He's grasping the point that two tests were refused. And again, I concede that we argued about reasonable cause because you have to have underlying facts and circumstances that lead to reasonable cause. We've devoted a lot of time and attention to that, without question.
Did you have an opportunity? You said you were interrupted by the arbitrator.
Did you have the opportunity to provide anything in writing?
We did.
To the arbitrator after?
We did brief it, yeah.
Right. And so that argument that you could not make orally, you could have made in writing. In the submission to the arbitrator, did you make the argument?
Yes, it was.
Concerning this, in the way that you've made it to this court, in terms of the environmental?
It was made in the way, the refusal to cooperate being both related to the blood urine testing and him failed to otherwise cooperate in the investigation. Again, the only factual predicate.
So the very same argument you're making to us, you made in writing to the arbitrator.
It was made in writing to the arbitrator, yes.
Where is that? Is that the record?
The record is the appendix has the arbitration hearing transcript. We didn't submit our briefs to the arbitrator as part of the appendix.
I thought you said you... Oh,
it's not a part of the appendix.
Part of this record.
It's not a part of this record. I'm out of time.
Okay, thanks a lot, Parsons. Mr. Graff?
It pleases the court. First of all, I would disagree that they made that argument in their briefs. Mm-hmm. And the brief is not part of the record here, so it's us against them on what was said. I think this case comes down to the very points that Judge Posner has made, and along these lines. Number one, there's tons of law which say that the reviewing area for an arbitration decision is very narrow, and a reasonable doubt should be given to the arbitrator. I don't think we even have to look to reasonable doubt. The record in this case is absolutely clear that the arbitrator dealt specifically what the parties asked them to deal with. And I'm going to quote, if I may, just very briefly from the transcript A84, and I'm quoting Mr. Parsons or the arbitrator. The arbitrator, the issue is going to be the reasonableness of the testing itself. Parsons, the issue in our mind, the company's perspective, is whether we had reasonable cause to ask them to submit to a test. Singular on December 10th, 1999. Arbitrator, I thought I just said that. Okay, Mr. Parsons. A-161. Arbitrator, I understand your point as to the fact that the issue here really is the reasonable cause to have done the test. Parsons, or requested the test. Arbitrator, to have requested the test. A-200. Arbitrator, sort of sounds like at least the major issue here is whether the particular facts here meet the definition of reasonable cause. Is that a fair statement? Parsons, the only thing I would add is that if the issue is reasonable cause, and what that does obviously is triggers the refusal to cooperate. And then again, continuing on, I say that's a threshold issue. The arbitrator said it's a threshold issue, and everybody says so. It comes down to that. And then Parsons at the very end, I agree with that. But if we had reasonable cause and he refuses to submit to the test, per the policy, he's discharged for insubordination. And then he claims he was cut off. If you read the transcript, which obviously you did, you saw this arbitrator, if he erred, he erred on liberality of letting in evidence. He didn't cut anybody off, and he allowed the company to make any arguments they wanted. They never made the argument that has been articulated to you, Your Honor. And I would submit...
What is the nature of his work?
Cox was in a foundry worker.
He's working in a foundry?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, isn't it very dangerous if he is under the influence of drugs?
Of course it would be.
Drop a red-hot piece. What is this foundry making?
Castings.
Making?
Castings.
Castings, right.
Yes.
So is it hot? I mean,
oh, yes.
So it could be very dangerous.
Oh, it could be very dangerous. No question about that. I wanted to call the... I think our position in this case is that the district court really read between the lines and read the transcript and nailed this case. They nailed it on really three things. Number one, the law is very clear as to the limited review aspects of the case. Number two, they looked at the facts and they said, hey, that arbitrator not only drew the essence of the decision from the award was not... The award was drawn from the contract. The arbitrator meticulously looked at the facts. And then thirdly, the court said properly there was a waiver here. And I think that two of the cases cited by the district court are really cut to the nub of this case. One is the Dean case, which is cited by the district court. which is in the appendix, it would be SA 10, I believe it is. SA 10, yes. And in that one, written by Justice Cudahy, this court, you know, would say pretty much with a case like this, the loser in the arbitration was coming before the court spinning a new argument. And the court, after reviewing what the law is on arbitrations, says, and these standards, the very tough standards, are, and these standards are for arguments that the disputants actually made at arbitration. The scope for a federal court to review tardy arguments is compressed still further to nil, N-I-L. And such Johnny-come-lately arguments are prohibited. And the court then goes on to say, and I don't want to waste your time, but I think this is so apropos to this case. A disputant cannot stand by during arbitration withholding certain arguments, then upon losing the arbitration, raise such arguments in federal court. We will not tolerate such sandbagging. That's really what this case is. This is sandbagging. What you're hearing here today is a novel attempt to try to get out of a situation that they didn't handle properly at the arbitration level. And I might also point out that in another case cited by the district court on that same page, that Baltimore Railroad case, and that's one of your cases, Judge Posner, you looked at the facts and you said, and you know the facts are not totally spelled out in the case, but it says the second defense they're raising is arbitrable. The judge told the parties, they're claiming that the judge told them they can't raise the defense, and Your Honor said he did not do that. He merely warned them that it might be moot. This is really akin to the argument they're making here, that they were cut off by this arbitrator. You can't read that arbitration transcript and even possibly accept that argument. You have a very forceful, very competent lawyer, and if he was thinking of making that argument and he thought he was being cut off, he'd have made it. He didn't. Everything in that transcript is all about reasonable cause. Just as I quoted from that transcript, that's what we argued. 99% of that case dwelt on that. And that's because that's what the company argued, the only thing they argued. And failing on that, they're trying to spin a new yarn. That's all we have, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Graff, and thank you to Mr. Parsons. Our last case for argument, United States versus Tank.